Today, it's Edwin's Monday evening property rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics Work Analysis Post, covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And as it's Monday, of course, Edwin's with me once again. Hi Edwin, how are you going?
G'day Martin, how are you going?
Yeah, there's a lot going on, isn't there, I tell you.
It's busy. Well, there certainly is, Martin. And today I'm going to test a theory with yourself, you know, in front of yourself and the viewers, and just see, you know, with all that's going on, I just want to see. I've got a pig with me here, and I want to actually check out the theory and test the theory to see if pigs fly. What do you reckon?
Well, I've always believed that pigs could certainly fly, particularly when, you know, you're breaking the rules of normal science and, you know, business and et cetera, right?
And when you've got Russian collusion and every other misinformation that's out there. But let's test the theory out. Now, I'm going to throw it up in the air. Pigs don't fly, Martin. Pigs just don't fly.
No. Gravity still exists. Shock horror.
Yeah. Numbers, as they say, numbers don't lie. Selling agents and mainstream media do, especially some notorious so-called reporters on some of the main portals that we get out there, which we're going to talk about later on today.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I think we should have a quick look at that, because I tell you, the quantum of spruiking has gone from astronomical to extra astronomical, right? If not galactic.
Look, it's out of this. It's out of this world. It's really something that if you control the media, you can put anything out there, and sooner than later, people are going to start believing it. Like, I'm actually starting to tell myself every morning that I'm blue eyed, I got blonde hair, and I was born in the outback of New South Wales. Sooner than later, it's got to come to pass, you know. So if you just keep on repeating the lie over and over again, it's going to come to pass, and people are going to start believing it. And that's what we're getting with this misinformation that's out there. The reality is, I'm Latin. I'm a confused Latin, you know, half indigenous from the Andes and half Portuguese ancestry. So I'm a little bit confused, but nevertheless, it is what it is. Yeah, and one of the things for sure is that numbers don't lie. What we see happening is a reflection, or it's deja vu from what you and I spoke about in the third, fourth week of 2020, which with regard to the auction numbers. They're spruiking 88% clearance rates, 85% clearance rates, 84% clearance rates and the like. But when you look at the actual numbers that really mean something to the industry, there's 290 properties are actually exchanged hands on the day of the auction. And let's not forget, folks, in Sydney alone, there's 15,000 selling real estate agents or real estate agents selling property. And if you divvy that up, just work out how much money selling agents are making. The industry is struggling. There's really not a lot happening. But you got to. What do they say? Numbers, statistics, and lies, and damn lies, or something like that.
Damn lies and statistics.
That's it. Lies, and statistics. And then there's the mainstream to top that off.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And of course, it's really interesting how a lot of the analysts quote the clearance rates, right? And claim, oh, huge acceleration of clearance rates. Well, yes, if you look at last year, it's pretty much the same. Volume is the same. And in fact, volume is a much better measure than so-called clearance rates, especially when we know that the clearance rates, as reported, are overstating what's going on anyway.
Well, that's right. And if you look at the actual sales figures, on average last year, there would have been about 1,500 on average, around about 1,500 per week, sales per week, which is where the agency, the industry that I'm involved with puts bread on the table. And when you've got, in total across New South Wales, 27,000 selling real estate agents, and the average commission is 1.7%. I mean, I did the math a few years back and I shared it on a video, and it works out that on average, when you look at across the board, agents are earning $246 per week on average, which means that a lot of offices are running really slim, are running on the smell of an oily rag. And I've also reported for a number of years now, even pre-COVID, that a lot of agencies that I knew of, even a lot of the franchise groups were going away from the franchise model into independent model. Why? Because they can't afford the franchise fees. They couldn't afford it. And if they couldn't afford it then, when volumes were around 1,500 per week, and now that the volumes are running on an average about 1,300 sales per week, that's across New South Wales, then yeah, the industry is in a lot of strife. So let's wait and see what happens when JobKeeper is finally taken out. I've spoken to a lot of people and they've said, well, the government will introduce something else, to keep the can further down the slope. But who knows, Martin? Who knows? I think it's just catching. The speed of the downturn is just getting away on any initiative or incentive, short of people being allowed to use further of the super, or further government grants. What else is there to keep this economy kicking along?
Well, the Reserve Bank will do some more quantitative easing, and they'll throw some more liquidity at the banks, and the banks will lend some more money to people so that they can get ever more loans. So that's the sort of the first lever. And the second lever, of course, is, as you say, well, what about other sources of funds, for example, from superannuation? So I wouldn't be surprised to see some further tweaks there. Although actually the latest data on superannuation withdrawal suggests that it's slower than it was previously. So that's quite interesting. And then, as you say, end of March, JobKeeper, JobSeeker falls off. The end of the interest and principal holiday repayments period from the banks, many other things also ending up. And also, don't forget this, now some landlords are going to be able to start kicking tenants out. I think people have forgotten about that, but that's also, coming back into vogue as well.
Well, that's right. And it's a lot of the renegotiated tenancy arrangements were on the proviso that the fees that were discounted at the time that they were going to be added on or tacked on at the end, no different to the mortgage holidays and so forth. But the interesting thing, Martin, is regardless of how much QE comes in and how much the governments are going to throw at the economy and everything, but the cost of living is just it's just going through the roof. And goods and services are increasing in value. Contract prices for many of the services that we acquire for our clients have gone upwards of 15-20%. And the other interesting thing is the supply chain went truly broken with a lot of the people that I've spoken to in different industries that make part that support the real estate industry, whether it be by materials to renovate, furniture and the like, anything that you could think of that would go into a home. A lot of these businesses have got huge delays in materials coming in. And even if we do manufacture, we still got to get the raw products, and the supply chains of even the raw products are stifled. And there's a lot of, uncertainty. So it's a wait and see, of course, but FOMO keeps on kicking on, and the spruikers keep on spruiking, and the mainstream and domain keep on telling us what a great job certain agents have done by getting 10, 15, 20% above reserve on the day, Martin.
Well, we'll talk about that in a second, because I think overquoting may have, or underquoting may have, something to do with it. But just on this issue of supply of materials, I've been talking to a couple of people in the construction sector who actually have committed to building a number of these off the plan, new home, land building sort of things, and then have discovered they can't get the building materials.
So, that's right. Go figure. We're even importing cement from abroad. And this is what a lot of people don't understand. And this is where things are starting to really unravel. Of course, it's a big, the politics and the, it's a lot bigger than you and I, and a lot bigger than the one town or one industry. But the government just don't seem to have a hold on things at the moment. There's real no controls. And from what we're getting from our WeChat chatterers is that China's still going to stick it to us, and they will continue to stick it to us until our Prime Minister literally bends over.
Well, let's pick in up some of the inbox issues that we've held over for a couple of weeks, right? Because there's quite a lot of stuff that people have thrown us and asked questions of, and we really appreciate all those questions. It's just that quite often we've got so much we want to talk about. And Edwin, I think the first one we should touch on is this question of price guides, because this is actually a really thorny question, isn't it?
Look, it is. It is. The price guides became very, very popular. It's the old, what we call in the industry, the old pilling system. It wasn't as popular before in the in the early 2000s, but then it surfaced when a lot of properties were being sold off the plan, and it made a big name for itself. It got adopted by a lot of the agencies that promote sale by way of auction or marketing a property by way of auction, and because the regulations were tightened in the industry, and we weren't allowed to use words such as price above or the owner seeks for a price above a certain point, offers above, and so forth. So when the regulator started looking at how the industry, how selling agents were marketing properties, they made a lot of changes. And so the price guides became very popular. Now, they couldn't get rid of price guides altogether because obviously the off the plan, people that were selling properties off the plan or subdivisions, it's very popular with that because the guides change along the way. So we went from a fixed price arrangement that we used to see many years ago, a fixed price or no price, to price guides. But the whole purpose of price guides is to obviously have lateral movement or have movement up and down the guide by depending on the conditions of the market and the inquiry levels and so forth. Now, one of our followers asked the question, if somebody makes an offer, let's say the price guide was 1 million to 1.1 million, and if somebody made an offer, let's say at 1,050,000, and the offer wasn't accepted, should then the guide be adjusted from 1,050,000 to 1.1, or alternative from 1,050,000 to 1,120,000 or 30, as long as they keep within that 10% boundary, which otherwise it's deemed to be one of the flaws or one of the factors of underquoting. But so now, in essence, in black letter of the law, yes, the agents are meant to disclose any offers or are meant to adjust the price guide. But they don't do it for two reasons. One, because the auction campaigns have reduced from the normal life of a campaign was about 6 weeks, if you recall. Now, some auctions are running only on a two-week campaign, and the auction's on the third week, and they have been early this year because of the hype and because of the farmer, because the agents know that there's a lot more property coming on the market and they want to sell the property quickly whilst people are thinking that they're going to miss out. So I've seen auction campaigns for as short as 2 weeks this side of 2021, which is rather interesting. So what happens there is that because of the short period, agents don't adjust the price guides because the regulators obviously don't have time to check if price guides are adjusted. And secondly, which is more importantly, that our viewers should follow this tip, and that is if you're going to make an offer on a property, make it in writing. submit it in writing, whether it be on text, email, or, you know, or on a piece of paper. Submit the offer in writing, because that puts more pressure on the agent to then, you know, make adjustments to the price quote. And if you do have a dispute, and if you do take it up with Fair Trading, you've got proof. They get away with it because 99% of the people that make offers, unfortunately, don't make it in writing, Martin.
No, it's very interesting, isn't it, that this whole area is really muddy. And it's interesting because the guidance in the regulations are very clear. Once the estimated selling price is revised, an agent must take all responsible steps as soon as practical to change or withdraw any advertisement displaying a selling price that is less than the revised estimated selling price. So they have an obligation, if they actually do move the bar, to go through and basically make sure that it is consistently displayed everywhere, right? But they don't do it.
No, they don't. And what you and I exposed not too long ago was the agent actually revising the price guide lower than the offers that are made prior to the auction, if you recall, that auction out in the wild, wild west of Sydney.
Yeah, it's pretty scary stuff, isn't it? So, you know, people basically don't really know where that benchmark is. And as we discuss quite often, of course, the benchmark is artificially low. And then, of course, they can claim that they were massively over the asking price. And look, isn't the market really, really hot? When in fact, of course, that isn't what's happened at all.
No, that's right. And look, the if the viewers want to take it further, as I said, reduce everything to writing, put everything in writing, and put it to the agents, and then I think when agents begin to receive offers in writing, and it's documented, by default they're a little bit more wary. Should their position be challenged? Obviously, recorded evidence of any conversations, which they should record everything anyway, and they should put everything in the files that said or discussed that at the open for inspection campaigns or the marketing campaigns in general. So there is a lot more pressure. The unfortunate thing is that the regulators are so under-resourced, and you know, I had an opportunity to speak with a few of the politicians a couple of years ago with some of the RTOs, and yeah, we were pushing that on the pollies, but unfortunately it is what it is, and they're not going to get the funding. They haven't got the funding, and therefore the resources are very starved, or the people are very starved of resources and manpower to really follow up on a lot, especially when with COVID on top of that and everything else that that they're managing now in the whole building industry, because the inspectors that were predominantly just focused on the real estate side of things are now looking up at other affairs, you know, building disputes and fence disputes and all sorts of things. So that's the unfortunate thing, Martin. But things have got to change. If we make it more and more public and we start exposing a lot of the shenanigans that go on, I'm hoping that the regulators will and hopefully pay attention and do something about it.
Mm. So just to be clear, if you put an offer in writing to an agent, right, is the agent obliged then to present that offer to the vendor?
There is a technical answer to that, and the agent is obliged to present that offer to the owner in writing. If there is no pre-agreed term under their agency agreement that an offer below a certain point is not to be discussed or not to be put to the vendor. But I can assure you that 99.9% of the agents don't put that on their forms anyway, regardless. So they wouldn't adopt that term on their agency agreements or make the owner aware of that anyway. So you'd be safe if you put in writing. You can be assured that the agent doesn't have that that extra condition in the agency agreement, and therefore they should. The other thing is whether they do is a different question. But there are ways to get across that. There are ways that over the years we've adopted and we've developed. And if you, yeah, you know, it's as long as the offer is a reasonable offer, most agents will put it to the owner and discuss it with the owner, because at the end of the day, they're also you know, as the saying goes in the industry, they're also conditioning the vendor to, you know, to be prepared to accept a lower amount than what they've got in their head that they're going to achieve.
Okay, very interesting. Well, we should keep on watching this space because I think it's a really important conversation to have, particularly at the moment. Another important conversation, though, is that Chinese message that you displayed on Twitter the other day. We should take that apart, I think, now.
Oh, look, that was an interesting article that came out in the Chinese mainstream digital media, which is basically talking about the heading is really was rather interesting. The title there of that article was Big Profit Made in 2020. 90% of Sydney property owners made profit from selling, while Chinese buyers show lack of interest in buying properties in Australia. UK and US inquiries increased dramatically. How is that for a headline?
Right. So that's basically people comparing and contrasting what's going on in China, right, and Chinese buyers here relative to, you know, some other countries. And, you know, we've seen it in some of the data too. That's pretty remarkable, right? That's a very big stake in the ground, isn't it?
Well, it is. And let's not forget that the other article that we shared where the mainstream media there were also warning the people that not to invest in Australia because Australia is in a world of kaka and it's economically they're gonna crush us. They're gonna make sure that we learn a lesson, and you know our PM learns his lesson by sticking his nose in trying to find out where COVID came from. But we know that it came from media rights. We know that. I mean, somebody should just tell him that and get it over and done with. So that it is interesting. And look, there's we've also spoken along the lines of the fact that they've tightened the money coming out of China. A lot of people talk about and continue to talk about and spruik the fact that there's all the shadow banking shenanigans that go on from there as well. But China's moving very, very rapidly to digital currency, which is going to put an end to a lot of this. Exportation of their money out of taking the money out of China and to buy property or buy other assets in other countries. So they're really monitoring what's going on, what's happening. But the interesting thing about this article, Martin, and this is what you and I were discussing before, is the fact that even the Chinese have picked up what we've already been talking for a number of months now, and that is the genuine interest from the UK and the US and from further discussions with my WeChat chatterers is the fact that, as we've said, a lot of these interests are from not only expats that are living abroad, of course they want to come back to Australia, but also from people that are looking for that safe haven because Australia is a great place to be at this time, given the fact of what's going on around the world. In further notation on that particular article, they also note that I just read a paragraph of it. It says, as Chinese buyers are dumping the Australian property market, Aussie expats are coming back in droves and buying up frantically. In 2020, Aussie property searches from US increased by 57% compared to the year before, followed by China, Hong Kong, only 17%, Singapore, 15%, and UK, 10%. And this is the kicker. Searches and inquiries from Washington State increased 197%. Those from New York State increased 183% compared to 2019.
That's pretty amazing. And that was the statistics. They came from the REA group, didn't they?
I don't know where these ones, I don't think a lot of these do. They monitor what we do better than what the REA and Domain are actually doing.
Okay.
This is directly from China. But The point that I wanted to make in this and sharing this with our viewers is that, look, Australia is sitting very well in terms of the place to live, a place to live, and in terms of a place to bring up a family because of what we have, regardless of how much bitching and whinging we see and read on Twitter with regards to who likes or dislikes Australia and what goes on. Look, outside of that, we are sitting really, really pretty. And there is a very strong contingency, as I've said, for people that are looking for permanent residency, and the pathway for permanent residency is somewhat easier if you've got a medical background and I guess a highly sought after if you're in a specialist field in IT. They're the two fields that the migration lawyers and the migration agents are telling us. They're getting a lot of inquiries day in, day out, and it is happening. So they are looking. And the appetite, however, their appetite when they're making further inquiries with the migration lawyers and the migration agents, is they're also asking to be put in contact or look at places for them to look at, not apartments, but they're looking for freestanding homes. So that's where a lot of the statistics come from. That's where a lot of the interest lays for myself and my team, because it's interesting to see what people are looking for in hearing, particularly in Sydney, because we got to keep tabs on what's happening not only in our backyard but also further afield, interstate as well as internationally.
Well, it's certainly a very interesting scenario, and we'll keep watching that. Now, going back to this issue of overquoting or underquoting, right, we got some very significant correspondence from one of our followers that basically tells an interesting story of a property that was on the market at one price and then at auction sold at a much, much higher price, and there were killer queues all down the road and all sorts of things. So trying to decode what was going on, they sent the material to us and asked us to have a look.
Yeah, look, it is interesting, and we've touched a bit about this as well on this as well. And look, January was the month of FOMO. I'm actually going to my calendar doesn't my calendar I've noted it down no longer as January. It's actually called FOMO. Because that's what seems to happen, because that's where the last 2 years it's been consistent. So I'm expecting the same thing in 2022. So I'm not going to call it January. I'm just going to call it FOMO. So what happened? But when we start breaking this apart, Martin, it's really interesting, because the majority of the people that are attending these auctions or open for inspections that we see, the hordes of people, a lot of them, and the majority of them, I find them to be locals and people that are shopping around, not because they're looking to buy, but because they're looking to see how the agent is performing and how and what the interest is in the property. So that's a majority of the people that are turning up. Now, I came across on Saturday, I came across a few couples that follow us on YouTube and on Twitter, Martin. It was rather interesting. I was doing the rounds in the Shire, and I came across a young couple, and they told me that earlier on Saturday, they attended an auction at Gaimi Bay. There were something like 50, 60 people present, but there was only three bidders. And this is what it comes to, is to who's actually participating at the auctions, regardless of the crowds that you see, who's actually participating. They themselves were surprised that there were only three bidders, considering the crowd. And these guys have been actively looking for to buy into the market since early last year. Now, to top that off, they also said that they were expecting this particular property to sell for well above 1.4 million. It actually got sold for 1,320,000, which they were surprised. And I asked them the question, would you have paid, given the fact that you were interested in the property, would you have paid the 1,320,000? And they said, look, if we knew that it was going to go that cheap, we may have been tempted, but this is the big but. But because we took heed to yours and Martin's advice, and you said that there were more listings going to come on, and we were tracking the listings as well, and went from 90 listings in the or pre-sending homes in the Shire to 240. Well, we figured we can spend a bit more search because we weren't really that content with a home anyway. So there you go. There's some. I know it's something that it's hearsay. Perhaps it's just. But this is what I see, what I hear on the ground from our followers, from people, from agents. And I can pull these stories together because this is what's actually happening. So there's a lot of hype. I get that. And you see a lot of that in the Inner West. But at the end of the day, look and see who's actually participating. Who's actually participating? That's one side of the coin. And the other side of the coin, which we'll discuss further, is why they draw these crowds and in some cases why there's a lot of people participating, and that comes back to the whole thing of underquoting.
Yeah, well, we've touched on a few times, but it's worth reflecting on again. I mean, there's this article that highlighted the property in Campbelltown that sold for $1.8 million, basically claiming that it was a remarkable price over the asking and much higher than last year. There's more to it than that, though, isn't there?
Oh, look, there is, and it's rather interesting because I know a number of agents in the area, and when I saw this article, I called a few of them around, and one of them actually knows the owner very well, Mark. And the interesting thing knows that the property was on the market last year around August as the reporter so reports, and also knows for a fact because she knows the owner quite well, knows for a fact that the owner wasn't going to accept below the 1.75 for starters. The reserve was never 1,630,000. Was never below the 1.7, as it's reported on this article. And this is what if these so-called reporters, really did their job and really investigated, they should have done a bit more research. Although the reporter does allude to the marketing continued with the agent that had it listed last year, and he failed to go through the failed to sell at the auction campaign, and they did allude to the fact that they had it on the market for 1,750,000. She does allude to that, and I couldn't find that information on CoreLogic other than what the agent told me that knows the owner very well. But I do know where the reporter would have obtained that information from, and that is the back end of the website where real estate agents put all the information that's relevant to the property, and where we are meant to, if we're selling property, we're meant to put basically the guide that we put on our agency agreements. So to have, in one way, have the reporter confirm the fact that the property was left on the market at 1.75, by information that's privileged to her, being a member of the Domain Group, and the simple fact that the agent that I know that knows the owner very well confirming to me that property was never on the market with a reserve below 1.7 just goes to prove what agents are doing. And this is, and it doesn't take much to find out that the shenanigans that go on out there, Martin, and this is, I'm calling them out. I'm calling this one out. I'm calling the reporter out. Do your job. Do it more efficiently, and get off your backside and make a phone call to the and find out the real history. So this farce about the headline of what was it? Sydney auctions Camperdown townhouse that failed to sell last year, snapped up for 1.8 million, and the subheading was 150,000 above the reserve. That's bullshit. It was never on the market below 1.75.
Yeah, well, never let the facts get in the way of a good story, as we might have said earlier on, right? And, pigs flying, well, yeah, here's a good example, right? Because, the reality of what's going on and how it's being portrayed, again, in the media, is rather different. And look, sure, there are definitely some properties that are attracting more attention than previously. Yeah, I accept that. But I do think that this shenanigans with the pricing and the ability to be able to effectively retrospectively present a sale as something more than just a sale simply by messing with the numbers is something that people need to take account of. This is more about trying to cajole more people to go buy property than anything else, isn't it?
Well, it is. But the good thing is that we put out last week and the week before, just hold the line. It's early days. It's we're only into the first week of February, and this is when listings start to climb. And we actually saw a huge climb in listing numbers across not all suburbs of Sydney, but in quite a number of pockets of Sydney. We saw a lot of, and in fact, as I was talking to a number of people that I met over the on the Saturday and doing the rounds, I was sharing and we agreed that not only in the areas that they were looking at, the listing numbers have increased and they were higher than the spring numbers of 2020. Now that says a lot for a lot of these areas, a lot of these pockets. Now a lot of other areas are yet to catch up. But I think I keep a weekly eye on the listing numbers on the Domain portal, as well as the freestanding homes or home listing numbers as well, and you see the constant rise. And the other thing is that for as many homes that get sold that come off market, there's a hell of a lot more replacing them. And I almost get the feeling that at this stage that the rising listing numbers, for sale listing numbers in Sydney, is coming on a little bit stronger, a little bit quicker than what they were when you and I were talking, the similar figures early last year, Martin. So, and let's see. The other thing is, as I said to a number of the guys that we came across, is look, you've got 15,000 real estate agents out there, selling agents out there that are based in Sydney, door knocking. Scaring the crap out of vendors, potential vendors, to list quickly because there's a lot of uncertainty coming in post March, and so if they want to list, they want to list quickly. So you've effectively got an army of selling agents that are going hungry if they don't list, looking for listings. So, I mean, it's a win-win. You got 15,000 selling agents looking for more listings. Listings are climbing by default because people want to come on the market after the holidays anyway. So it's just if you don't get the deal that you're after, walk away. Don't get pressured into paying more than what you want to pay. Look for the upside. And again, the upside may be something that's relevant to you as a family because you need something as a family unit close to living close to other family. The upside may be that you could put a small extension, do a quick renovation to lift the value. But don't buy something that's fully done up. Don't buy somebody else's dodgy renovation and something that you're not going to get your money back should you need to offload it in the next 6 months.
Yeah, good advice, Edwin. And, there was an interesting tweet that I saw today, which was replaying, I think it was a Brisbane agent, basically saying, look, the reason that prices are relatively buoyant at the moment is lack of supply. That may well not be the same ahead. In other words, more supply coming on. So that's another validation point about more supply later. And, things are moving quite quickly. My surveys again indicate still more people looking to put their property markets, property on the market quite soon. But interestingly, do you remember I mentioned to you that I'd had somebody put something through my letterbox saying, yes, if you're interested in selling, contact me, right? Well, after that, I had more than half a dozen people over the YouTube and the Twitter and indirectly contacting me by email saying, we've had the same thing. There is definitely something going on where maybe it's buying agents, maybe it's just selling agents, but effectively people are actually trying all sorts of campaigns to try and get people to actually put their properties in the market.
Oh, Martin, there's nothing new. There's nothing new under the sun. I've seen it all before. And if you look closely, it won't be. It looks like a handwritten note in blue pen, but we look at it very, very closely. It's not. And if you go talk to your neighbours, they'll probably receive the same pamphlet as well. So look,
well,
there's nothing.
That's exactly right. So I did actually stick my nose in up and down the road, and guess what?
There you go. And if you compare the note, you'd see it's being mass produced. Yeah, it's like the voting ballots. I won't say where, but you know, like those dodgy things.
Interesting.
Russian collusion.
The envelopes were handwritten.
Oh well. Yeah, you got to bring out some form of authenticity, but it's what's inside the envelope that counts.
Correct, exactly right. So again, folks, just be a little bit cautious. If you get a letter through the letterbox saying, hey, if you thought about putting your property in the market, you know, and we'll pay the legal fees if you want to sell, it might not be all that it appears to be.
No, that's right. Look, it's been a full-on week, and I think things are only just going to get busier, but it'll be interesting to to see your take during the week and with everything that's flying around, and as we get closer to the day where everything is pulled back and we see who's swimming naked.
Good old Warren Buffett. It's a very good quote, isn't it? Edwin, I appreciate your time today. A good chat once again, of course, and we'll do the same again next week. And folks, if you've got specific questions you'd like us to explore and examine, just send us an email. And we can't guarantee to cover it, but, you know, quite often it will flow into our conversation one way or the other. So it's always appreciated. And we do appreciate so many people commenting on our shows.
Yeah, we'll get it. And I couldn't bring Dusty on the show today, by the way. He actually got his vaccine today. So I can't remember whether he got the AstraZeneca or the Pfizer or the Russian, but I don't know. But he's just laying a bit low, so he couldn't make it to the podcast today. So hopefully he survives. And I'll bring him on. I'll bring her on next week. You know, if I'm going to take her out on open for inspections, Martin, yeah, she's got to be fully vaccinated. Yeah, can't let her. And I'm also looking for a mask for her as well.
Well, the question is, can a pussycat make a valid bid as an auction?
I know I have read stories of cats inheriting millions of dollars, so I don't know. Let's see if we can answer that for our viewers for next week. How's that?
Yeah, it might be quite interesting. I could see a whole new industry arriving, right? It could be quite interesting. Edwin, thanks once again, and we'll see you again next week.
Always a pleasure, Martin. Looking forward to it.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Quick reminder that tomorrow, Tuesday at 8 p.m. Sydney time, I'll be running my next live stream event with Chris Bates, mortgage broker based in Sydney, and he and I will be discussing the current status of the property market, and specifically the question of underwriting standards and what's happening with the numbers of applications, the number of new properties being listed, and the prices of those properties. Join us 8 p.m. Sydney time. And you can ask a question live on the show, or you can send it in beforehand via the DFA blog. All the links are below.